Good morning, Birshas Rabbi Crown. So we are on Mem Dalet Amid Aleph, third line from the top. It says Amar Mar. So if you recall what we were discussing last week, is a case or multiple cases where a man gives a woman a ksuba and then gives her another ksuba. So the first ksuba says that he is responsible to pay her 200, and the second ksuba says he's responsible to pay her 300. The question is, how do you deal with these two things? Is it cumulative, meaning that he owes her 500? Is one replace the other? As well as we had some discussion about, like, one of these, if he gives it to her at the time of, let's call it engagement and marriage, Eirusin and Nisuin, there's a whole concept of when someone owes somebody money, they have the ability to go after property that they may have sold after that date. So what's the effective date of the handoff of that money? Is it as of when they became engaged, in which case she's able to go after property that may have been sold after that point, or is it only but the point that when she gets married? So continuing along, Amar Mar, this is talking about the opinion of Rav Huna. Amar Mar, I b'hai gavna, if she wants to collect with the first one, or if she wants to collect with the other one. So there, again, there's two ksubas. Ksuba number one is 200. Ksuba number two is 300. So the difference between the two is the ksuba of 200 is valid as of November 1st, and the ksuba of 300 is valid as of February 1st. So if she wants to go with 200, then she's eligible to collect from property that may have been sold after November 1st. She wants to go with the ksuba that's as of 300, she's able to only collect with a smaller amount of property potentially that's sold after March 1st. She has a choice of doing one or the other, meaning that they're not cumulative, but that, you know, she has two different documents with which to work. Lema Polga Ravi Nachman, is do we say that what Rav Huna says is similar to Rav Nachman? Dam Rav Nachman, Shtei Shtaros. These talks about there's two documents about a transaction involving a field. Hayotzim Bazeh Acharzeh. There's one dated one day and one after the other day. Bitel Sheni Asarishon. That the second one nullifies or overrides the first one. Lami Ami Idmarle. So did we say Amar Papa Umo de Rav Nachman that he would agree that in that sort of case, the Osef Beidikla, that, you know, it's a whole transaction involving a field. So he has contract number one about selling or handing over a field. Contract two, number two, is selling and handing over the same exact field. However, contract number two, if he added in a dikla, he added in a palm tree, something similar, something secondary, additional thing, Litosefis Ksave, he specifically must have written it in order to add in the addition. Hachanami, similarly too, in our case, Ha'osiv L'amayri. So the only reason he wrote the second ksuba for her was to give her something additional as part of the second ksuba. Gufa, and this is the exact same thing we just said, this Bereisa. I'm Rav Nachman. Shtei Shtaros, Hiyotzim Azeh, or Azeh, two Shtaros, one right after the other. Bitel Sheni Asarishon, the second one nullifies, overrides the first one. I'm Rav Papa, Modi Rav Nachman, the Yosef Beitiko, Tosef Kisve. That if he adds the palm tree, he's clearly saying that he's adding on. It's not just it nullifies the first one, it's the same as the first one, except he's adding on something additional. Gemara says, Pshita, it's obvious that maybe what we're talking about here is Rishon b'mecher usheni b'matana, that the first shtar was meant to be a sale, and the second shtar was meant to be a gift. So what's the point of that? You know, same thing. So one, he's selling it, and one, he is gifting it. Why would he do something like that? Yafas kokahu the kasavle, in order to give more strength to the person who he is transferring the property to. Why? Mishum dina devar matzra. Because there's this whole concept of devar matzra. What does that mean? So it means if you have a person who is selling their field and they have a neighbor that has the adjacent field. So person A owns a field and he wants to sell it to person B. Meanwhile, person C has the field that is adjacent to the property of person A. So he has, in effect, the right of first refusal to come along and say, you know what, this field is right next to my field, so I want the ability to purchase it, and let him gift the other person or sell the other person some other different field, or let the other person buy a different field. However, that only works when it comes to a sale. So because he did a shtar where he sold it, and then he did a shtar where he gifted it, he precluded the neighbor from being able to come along and say that they want to acquire that adjacent field. The chol shekein, even more so, rishon v'matana v'sheni v'mecha. You might have a case where you have a first shtar is a gift, and the second shtar is a sale. Damrina mishum dina d'valchov d'chasav. Because the reason he did that is because he wanted to help him against creditors. Why? Because if because what happens? So if when he gifts the field to somebody else, he really has no rights. He just has it as a gift. But when he sells it for a certain amount of money, he has the right to go back and claim. He says, "Well, if you're going to take this field from me, I need to somehow be made whole for what I paid for that amount of field." So in each of these two cases, because he's either doing it as a sale followed by a gift or a gift followed by a sale, there's a legal reason as to benefit the person in some way that they're doing this. Ella im shneim b'mecher shneim b'matana. But if both shtarim are both sales, or both shtarim are both gifts, b'tel sheni as a rishon. That must be that the second one comes along and it nullifies the first one. That's the only reason that he wrote a second shtar is to replace the first shtar. In my time, why would you say that it nullifies? Rafram says, Amar odie odile. That he says, what happened here? The first shtar was problematic. There was a problem with the first shtar. It wasn't valid. It wasn't legal. Something was wrong with it. Rav Acha Amar, Amar achule achle lishibude. He said, and Rav Acha says, no, what's happening in the second case is that person A sold the field to person B on March 1st, and he's willing to accept a new contract that says, you know what, I only have the right to go collect from other of your property as of February 1st. So he's willing to delay make the date later of when he owns the property so that he has less of a right. So for whatever reason, he's willing to give in. So that's why, going through Rav Acha, there might have been a second shtar. So my Beinehu, what is the difference between these two views? Ika Beinehu, Odeya Sade. In the first case, Rafram's case, where he says the shtar is invalid. So in the first case, what are you going to do? You're going to say this is a invalid shtar. It was done incorrectly, wrongly, badly, whatever it is. It's going to cause the disqualification of the Edom as well. There were Edom on this shtar. By virtue of saying the shtar is invalid, you're slighting the witnesses. Ulishlume peire, that if the transaction was invalid, then the any fruits that the person might have eaten from that property, he has to pay back because it was an invalid transaction. Ulitaska, or paying property taxes. So depending upon who owns the field, they are responsible to own the property taxes. So in Rafram's case, the person who was given the field through the shtar, it was an invalid transaction from that point until the point they got the valid shtar. In the second shtar, the transaction was always valid. It's just a question. Second case, the Rav Acha, the transaction was always valid. He was given a replacement shtar that made its effective date for purposes of collection a little bit later on. So going back to our case, we were talking about Ksuba, Mahavi Alei Ksuba. So what do we learn about Ksuba? Tashma, the Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mishum, Rabbi Elezer, Bir Rabbi Shimon. The Rabbi Yehuda said the name of Shmuel, said the name of Rabbi Elezer, the name of Shimon. Mana Masai Mina Erisin. So you have a Ksuba, typically you have a Ksuba that has either 100 or 200 is part of the ksuba. The standard ksuba is 100 or 200, whether they're a besula or a ba'ula. So that becomes an obligation from the point of erusin. V'tosefes, but if there was any additional, let's say in the ksuba it said 300, that extra 100 is only an obligation, meaning that it's only something that has to be paid and that the woman is able to collect against property from the time of actual nisuin. The chachamim roman, but the chachamim say no. Echad zeh, echad zeh, mina nisuin. Both of them are only collectible from the time of the actual nisuin, from the time of the actual marriage. So even though the ksuba might have been there from the point of erusin, the collection is only from the nisuin. The hilchos on the halacha is echad zev min nisuin. In both cases, we're talking about nisuin. Okay, moving on to a new mishnah, different topic. So if you recall, we had talked about the case of there's a girl who's a nara, and remember, a nara is between 12 and 12 and a half, and her father marries her off, and the guy comes along who married her and says, you know what, she was not a basula. So one of two things happens in that case. If it's proven that the guy was lying, not telling the truth, then he has to pay a fine. However, if the woman was found to be a ba'ula, when she shouldn't have been, then the pasuk says, "Vahotzias hanara el pesach beis avia." You take the nara to her father's house, uskaluva, and you stone her. Anshe ira ba'avanim v'me. So you stone her with stones, and she is killed. He asks a nevala b'Yisrael because she did something terrible in Yisrael. Is known beis avia ubi arta rabbi kerbecha. So that's the pasuk. So we're going to kind of take apart the pasuk a bit and use it to teach us assorted different things. But it clearly says we're talking about a nara, and we're talking about you do it at her father's house, and you're doing this nevala b'Yisrael, and that's there was this nevala b'Yisrael was done, and that's why you do it. So the Mishnah says, Hagiyoret. So you have a woman who's a convert. Shagirta bita imas. So you have a woman and her daughter, and both of them convert at the same time. Bizinta, and then she, when she was a nara in this case, she was proven to have not be a basula, that she had done adultery. Harezel bechenek. She does not. This pasuk does not apply to her. This pasuk says that she should be stoned in front of her father's house. That doesn't apply to her. She gets chenek. She gets strangulation. So because she didn't meet one of the criteria of the pasuk, and the Gemara will explain what these are, but basically because she's a giyoret, you can't say nevela asasa nevela b'Yisrael. She was not, even though she's Jewish, she's not considered a natural Yisrael. So therefore, this pasuk wouldn't apply to her in this case. And therefore, ein la pesach beis ha'av. Therefore, you also wouldn't kill her in front of her father's house. Velo mea sela. And if the man was found to be lying, he isn't obligated to pay the 100 sela. So the wording of the pasuk kind of is very narrow, that if any certain criteria are not met, the whole situation comes apart. Similarly, Haisa Horasa Shalobikdusha, so the mother who's a convert, she became pregnant before she converted, the Ledita Bikdusha, but she gave birth when she was converted. Harezu Biskila, she is liable to be stoned in that case. She's liable to be stoned because when she was born, she was a Yisrael, right? Her mother had converted at that point. Ve'enla Pesach Beis Ha'av, but she does not, there is no concept of her being stoned at her father's house, and the Gemara will explain why. Basically, when it comes to a Giyoret, someone who converts, they lose the connection with their parents. So whoever her father was is no longer technically her father anymore because she converted. So ve'enla Pesach Beis Ha'av, ve'lo mea sela, and the husband, if he wasn't telling the truth, isn't on the hook to pay the 100 sela. However, haisa horasa the lady sabikdusha, or if the woman, the mother became pregnant after she converted, the lady sabikdusha, she was born when as completely Jewish, so therefore harehi kavas Yisrael chol dvareha, she's considered like a regular, naturally born Jew in all matters. And the Gemara will go into this in more detail. Yeshla av edla pesach beis av. But if she has a father, forget it. We're not talking about a convert here. We're talking about someone who is a naturally born Jew. Yeshla av. She has a father. Ve'edla pesach beis av. And the father is homeless. He doesn't have a house. So or yeshla pesach beis av. Or the father. Or the father has a house, but the father is no longer there, the father died. Harezu b'skila, she should still get skila. Why? Lo nemar, Pesach Beis Av, elul mitzvah. So the Pesach Beis Av is not essential for what we're doing here. It's really just It's just an add-on factor. So it's not something that is ma'akev whether you go through the skila or not. It really is only to put in place a detail. So it's not essentially necessary. So let's pause here and we'll pick up tomorrow and we'll start with the Gemara tomorrow. The Gemara is going to go into a couple of these cases and basically elaborate how they, based upon the psukim that we're talking about, how they all apply. But for now, everyone should have a wonderful day.